Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
This show is brought to you by SeatGeek, the perfect place to buy and sell tickets. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix, and we have a terrific show for you today. Oklahoma City Thunder head coach Billy Donovan joins the podcast to discuss the transition from college and winning the respect of two of the best players in the NBA. That's next on the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix.
Yahoo Sports presents the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your host, Chris Mannix.
Welcome back. Another episode of the Vertical Podcast. We're here at the Thunder training facility, practice facility, with Billy Donovan, the head coach of the Oklahoma City Thunder. A very understanding Billy Donovan, who was scheduled to do this podcast this morning and rescheduled it for me after I did the genius move of not bringing the equipment with me to the podcast center. Billy, I appreciate it, and I appreciate your flexibility there as well.
No problem. I'm happy to do it, and I'm glad we finally connected, and you got all this equipment set up.
I'm good. I think I'm okay here. I think we'll be set at some point. So, all right, so Long Island born, Providence College kind of bred, now out in Oklahoma after 2 decades at Florida. How comfortable are you with this environment now with Oklahoma?
Well, the people here have been wonderful in the community. My family has adjusted very well. I think you're always a little bit nervous, you know, when you go over and take over a job, especially in coaching. You're going to be involved with the team and the players in the organization from start to finish on most days. And, you know, your wife and your kids are left, you know, there at home, and you get concerned and anxious whether or not they're going to be happy. And I give my wife a lot of credit. She's been very supportive. We were both worried, as you mentioned, being in Florida for almost 20 years. Everybody was happy. And it was a great community and a great place. And you don't know how this next transition is going to take place. But the people here in the community couldn't have been any nicer. My kids have done very well. They really have made a lot of friends. My wife has really enjoyed it as well. So the transition here has been a real positive one. And I think the organization has helped my wife and my family make that transition. And that part of it's been great.
We're headed towards April now. So this season so far, what you've expected, different than what you expected?
You know, I get asked that a lot. I think I was pretty well prepared coming into the year. And the reason I say that is because, you know, Coach Pitino, who I played for at Providence, you know, coached several years in the NBA. Jeff Van Gundy, who coached me in college, several years in the NBA. Stu Jackson coached me in college, NBA guy. Gordy Chiesa, NBA guy. Playing with Rick Carlisle, having Eric Spoelstra and Stan Van Gundy in the state of Florida when they were at the Heat and the Magic. Just knowing a lot of different NBA coaches, I had an idea of what the basketball this season that was like. What I, you know, didn't know was what was it going to be like working with a new group of people. And that part of it, to me, with giving up what I had to give up at Florida, relationship-wise, I did not want to come into a situation where I was really unsure. And I think Sam Presti and Mr. Bennett, the owner, they did an unbelievable job laying out the organization, the values, what they want to do, what they want to represent, how they want to be, how they want to grow the organization. And I felt, you know, very, very aligned with both Mr. Bennett and Sam. And from that standpoint, there really was nothing that I sit there and take a step back and say, wow, I was really not ready for this. You know, now the game is different. You're dealing with different people on your team. You're building relationships. You're getting to know guys better. You get to know people in the building better. But the day-to-day part of it hasn't been like this big, big surprise to me, which has been helpful. But I think a lot of people helped prepare me for that.
How much is the game different?
It's totally different in a lot of respects. The first thing is you have obviously a high, talented, caliber level of player here in the NBA. And you know, there's rotations, there's first unit, there's second unit, there's certain combinations of guys that play together. A lot of times in college, you're not really dealing with that. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to play your six, seven, eight guys, and you're going to kind of sub around them, and those guys are going to play. But, you know, here you got to build a full and complete roster. So you're figuring out through injury, through different teams, personnel, how do you adjust, how you move people around. That's been somewhat different. I think the other part that's been different is the wider lane and the deeper three-point line creates for a lot more spacing, and it opens it up. Obviously, in college, defensively, you can stand in the lane and zone out. You can't do that here with a defensive 3 seconds. Timeouts, being able to advance the basketball. It's really, I think, in a lot of ways been great for me because it's forced me to think on a different level, to grow at a different level. And, you know, I said when I first came in here that I just want to continue to learn and get better and try to bring and help bring value, you know, to the organization, to the team as best I can. But it definitely is a lot different than college.
I would imagine one of the differences is that when you're with 18, 19-year-olds, they'll run through walls for you at times if you tell them that's what you want them to do to be successful. Is it different here for you? Has it been different with grown men making a lot of money in maybe in a lot different situation than the college kids you had?
The biggest difference I notice is not even the money part of it, because as you know, we've got two high level stars on our team in Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, and both of those guys want to keep getting better and they want to be great. So they're looking for ways to grow, develop, and get better. I think the biggest difference is, you know, Kevin Durant comes on the court and he's working on his shooting. He doesn't need anybody to tell him why he's missing. He already knows, you know, because he's taken so many shots. So it's not necessarily like in college, guys are wanting to get to this level. So they want their game to evolve and grow, and they're coming out of high school and they're making that next step. But when you've got guys that have been in the league for 7, 8, 9 years, these guys understand what they need to do to be successful, and what you try to do is provide the resources to help them get there. So that part of it maybe has been a little bit different, but in terms of the what people perceive as attitudes or egos, here in Oklahoma City, these guys are great guys. They're good people to be around. I really, really have enjoyed every day coming here and working with all of them.
At Florida, you were Florida basketball for the better part of 2 decades. That program was identified with you. Here, it's more of a cog in the system, a significant one, but you know, people think of Durant and Westbrook when it's Oklahoma City. You've got a strong GM in Sam here. Has it been any adjustment in that way for you at all, you know, being sort of just part of the something big here rather than the face of the program?
Yeah, no, I've been fine with that. And I think for me, the biggest thing was I've always tried to live my life with a level of humility. I'm not really wrapped up in that. Mr. Bennett, Sam Presti, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, Serge Ibaka, Nick Collison, you know, since the franchise has moved from Seattle, what they've accomplished here and what they've done over an extended period of time has really been remarkable. And I don't need to be the face really for myself personally of anything. You know, I enjoy competing. I enjoy being in the gym on the floor. I love trying to help a group of guys grow to maybe become the best version of themselves. I like to bring value. I think there are some people that, you know, that really, that is an existence for them, where they need that. I really don't. I really enjoy being a part of something bigger than myself. And I really looked at it that way at Florida. I thought Florida was bigger than me. I understood being there for 20 years. People identified basketball with me being there, and players in college are obviously turning over every few years. But I'm fine with that transition. For me personally, has been a fine one.
Was there anything that you expected that you changed kind of on the fly? In other words, whether it's how you went at practices, whether it's how you shoot around games, that you thought, hey, I'm going to do this coming in, and then maybe you realized week 1, month 1, month two, that maybe we'll do things a little bit differently than I expected.
Oh, I think that definitely happened. You know, when you're walking into a situation, one with an organization you never worked with before and players you never worked with before, and on top of that, 4 guys that have been here for 7, 8 years and have done a lot here, you want to come in and basically make it a collaborative effort. So I never came in and said, okay, this is what we're doing. This is how we're doing it. I always included those guys. You know, here's what I'm thinking. This is what I'd like to do. I think having Monty Williams and Mo Cheeks, who are experienced veteran NBA guys, have helped me, you know, through that transition. But there's a fine line there, because the one thing I've always wanted to remain true to is I want to be who I am. And I don't want to be somebody else where I feel like every day I'm not comfortable in my own skin. I want to be who I am. But also in doing that, I want to make decisions that are in the best interest of the players and the team. So, you know, there's been some ideas I've had in shoot arounds, and, you know, I've talked to guys and they're like, you know, I'm not so sure about that. You know, can we do this? And I'm open-minded. And there's been some times where I say, hey, listen, I really believe we need to do this. I think we need to do this. And they've given some too. So I think it's about working together. Certainly, I'm not going to do everything exactly the same that they did at Florida. I've said this before. There's things that they've done here that have been very, very successful. There's things I've wanted to keep, you know, in place. There's no reason for me to walk in here defensively and say, listen, we're changing all the terminology. You're going to learn my terminology. I'd rather be the person learning the new terminology rather than 15 new players. So all that stuff's been great because of the people that have been around me to help me, you know, make that transition.
Is it different for you asking players for their kind of input? Were you like that at Florida? I mean, it's different in that sense, grown men versus, you know, kids who don't have your wealth of experience mm-hmm. at that job. Was that different for you to ask players?
I had a couple situations where it was very, very similar to the way it is here. And the group that stands out to me is when I had Joe Kim Noah, Al Horford, and Corey Brewery come off a national championship. Those guys obviously knew what it took to win a national championship. They all come back. And there was a lot of working together because there was a view that they had of why they were successful. And sometimes I didn't agree with that view. And there was a view I had of the reasons why we were successful, and they didn't agree with that view. So we had to work together. So a lot of times, because they had the experience, we would sit down a lot of times and I'd say to them, hey guys, this is what we got planned for practice today. This is why. Are we good? You know, coach, I think we need to do this. And I'm going to take that into consideration. There'd be times I'd sit them down and say, listen, how are you guys mentally? How are you physically? Do we need a day here? Do you guys feel like you need a day off? Do you need to get back in the gym? You know, and we would communicate like that. And I think that when you have guys that have a high level of experience, they see things a little bit differently than a coach does because they're the ones out there playing. And I think you can absorb and extract information that can be very, very valuable in terms of helping the team get better.
Billy, hang tight for just a second because I want to talk about SeatGeek. Have you ever been frustrated trying to buy tickets online? Most sites make it complicated, and they all try to sneak in huge fees at checkout. That's why you need to try SeatGeek. SeatGeek has taken all the work and hassle out of shopping for tickets. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place, so you save time and never miss a deal. You could even set alerts for upcoming events, and SeatGeek will let you know if ticket prices fall. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. And before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. Best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. Unlike other sites, they show you the full ticket price from start to finish and never try to trick you with huge fees on the checkout page. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app, go to the Settings tab, and click Add a Promo Code. Enter promo code MANIX. SeatGeek will then send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app today. Enter promo code MANIX right now.
You're listening to the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix.
What's something you didn't know about Kevin or Russ at the start of the season that you know either completely know differently now or know more about now?
The biggest thing I didn't know was what they would be like as people. And I don't say that negatively or positively. You watch these guys play and you see incredible talent and abilities and gifts. And the only feeling I had of either one of those two guys was through a TV screen. And their talent level obviously comes through the TV screen loud and clear. But they're still people. And I've always looked at it that way. And they still have feelings. They still have emotions. They still have goals, ambitions, and dreams. They're like anybody else. They've just been blessed with a high level of ability and talent through an incredible work ethic. They've become unbelievably successful. You know, how do you help them continue on that trajectory that they've been on in their career to get better and improve? So the biggest thing for me that I didn't know is I didn't know them. And I think as I've gotten to know them, I feel very, very fortunate that I don't want to say that either one of them are misunderstood because I think that's, you know, I'm not trying to say how they're interpreted, but I think that people would look at them entirely differently if they got a chance to meet them as guys. Because I don't think that ever comes out. What comes out is their talent, their ability. Russell Westbrook's dunk, his athleticism, and Kevin's Durant scoring, and this, and his. But when you get around these guys, like, they're unbelievable guys. Mm-hmm. And that's a thing to me that I didn't know how they would be. I was told that. But after being around them, I really enjoy being around them. I have great admiration and respect for their competitiveness and their will and their drive. And I really have appreciated both of them working with me, listening to me. Because, you know, I'm new. They've been here for 7 years, 8 years in this league. I've enjoyed working with them. They've been great to me. They've treated me unbelievably. And it's been really a lot of fun for me being around not only two guys that are as talented as they are, but two great people. I really have enjoyed that.
Did you feel at all that you had to earn their respect? I mean, they were coming off conference finals visits, NBA finals visits. They'd had success. Did you feel coming in that you had to earn that respect?
I think anytime you come into a new situation, just naturally there could be some doubt or second guessing what's going on. And to what I said to you a little bit earlier is I needed to come in and be myself. And I'm going to study hard the game. I'm going to work hard. I'm going to prepare real hard. And I think what happens is, if you're prepared for situations and you're ready for situations, I think what happens is you start to gain players' trust. I think when you're honest and truthful, you start to earn players' trust. I think when you go through competitive situations with guys in the heat of the moment, you build trust. So for me, it was about building trust because they didn't know me. And I wouldn't expect those guys just to say, okay, I'm just going to trust this guy. Trust me as a person, trust me as a coach. But hopefully as I've been around them, you earn and you build up that trust. And I've always felt like trust is something that's built over a period of time. I think to come in here and slam my fist on the table and I'm going to be respected and trusted, well, that's each individual person's right and responsibility. To me, I've always looked at it as I'm going to be consistent. I'm going to be true to who I am. I'm going to coach how I've always coached. I'm going to be myself. And, you know, if I'm honest and truthful and straightforward, I'm going to live with that. And, you know, over a period of time, I think all of my relationships, not only with those two guys, but the entire team has grown because when we've been with each other longer.
I don't know if in college you were Cal on the sideline in terms of how frenetic you went up and down, or Sean Miller sweating through his shirt as he did recently. But have you found you have to change your temperament at all on the sidelines as you evolve into a pro coach?
I think I learned and got better with that as I got older. You know, certainly to your point, you know, do you feel like you have to earn trust or respect? Well, you know, you get into these situations in your life where, you know, the first time you step on the floor as a college basketball player, you got to earn some trust and respect. And you finish your playing and you then try to get to the NBA, you got to do it. I've had to do that. I think every person has to do that. So I think as I've evolved as a coach, you realize that there's a lot going on, you know, inside of a game. So for me, the number of timeouts, the number of meetings, half times, all these times we're in front of players, I think you really want to make sure that you collect yourself and you're really getting a point across that's done in a very timely fashion. And for me, I don't think I feel like I've had to change necessarily my demeanor on the sideline. I think probably my sideline demeanor from when I was 28 years old at Marshall is way different than it was now at 50.
One of the hallmarks of your rotations here in Oklahoma City has been your staggering Durant and Westbrook, which is something we haven't seen much of before. Has that worked out the way you had hoped it would work out?
It only works out because Kevin and Russell, you know, want it to work out. Because I think one of the things that is really important to me with the both of those two guys is because they're seeing everybody, they're the number 1A, 1B, however you want to classify it, on everybody's scout report. So they're getting help. They're getting loaded up. And one thing you want to try to do as a coach is you want to try to help them be efficient and successful. So the last thing I want to do is take away their rhythm, their flow, and where they feel comfortable. Kevin has been really, really willing to be open-minded about the staggering in terms of coming out a little bit earlier in that first quarter and then going back in at the end of the first quarter. That's been really helpful and it's given us some flexibility. I think Kevin...
You don't see a lot of MVPs buying in like that. I'm not sure there's many stars, if any, in the NBA that would be okay with that kind of...
And that's my point, what I said earlier about those guys as guys. You know, you come with an idea and you come with something. And again, if Kevin said to me, hey, coach, listen, this is just, I don't know if I can keep my rhythm and play at the level I want to play. I'm not going to do that. When Kevin finally came back from his injury and we started the season, and we started talking before the first game, he was very, very comfortable playing that first 12 minutes. We did have some problems, you know, without those two guys being staggered. And we tried to do a few different things. And I tried to work around it. I felt like I needed to give that a shot as a coach because you want to exhaust, I think, all different combinations and scenarios before you get to the end of the season when you look at something. Geez, we've never done that before. I don't know. And that could happen. But and I finally went to Kevin. I said, Kevin, you know, and he said, Coach, let's try it. Let's try it. Let's see how it goes. And we got 20-something games left, whatever. Let's do it. And it's been really good for our second unit. I think it's been good for Kevin. It allows Kevin and Russell to play some time together. It allows them to play some time apart. It throws different things into the realm in terms of preparing for us. But again, it works because those two guys, as I mentioned, are such good guys.
I don't know if you insulate yourself from the chatter outside. The people outside, they nationally, you tend to look for any signs of discord between Durant and Westbrook. It's always like a shoulder slump there, an eye roll there. That winds up on the highlight reels, and it becomes a talking point for debate. What have you seen about their relationship, the two of them?
I feel bad that they deal with that because it's like this. I think Kevin, maybe even Russell referred to it. They're like brothers. You know, if you're brothers and you're basically a year apart in age, there's going to be some times where you're going to get under each other's skin. Like that just happens. These guys have been with each other. But in terms of them and their relationship, those two guys love each other. I mean, they've got a great relationship. They spend a lot of time with each other. I don't think there's any question that just being around them for this year and hearing some of the things that you've mentioned or hearing that out there even before I got there, I couldn't be the first thing from the truth. I think that they both have each other's back. I think they both care about each other. I think they both want to see each other be successful. And the one thing that's not been talked about enough, in my opinion, the reason those two guys have reached the level that they've gotten to, just being here and observing and only imagining what it was like over the last 6 years, they both have made each other better. And they both come in the gym every day at 8:45, 9 o'clock. They're the first two guys here. That internal drive has raised both of their level of play. And I think that they both understand how that's made each other better. But all of a sudden, if they get a little bit frustrated, oh, I don't like play. That, and I just don't believe that to be true.
All right, more with Billy Donovan in just a second. But I do have to tell you guys about Casper mattresses. Covering the NBA can lead to a lot of late nights. And I can tell you, there's nothing better than a good night's sleep. Casper mattresses provide resilience and long-lasting supportive comfort. They have just the right sink, just the right bounce. Two technologies, latex foam and memory foam, come together for better nights and brighter days. It's an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. $500 for a twin-size mattress and $950 for king-size mattresses. Compare that to industry averages, that's an outstanding price. It's completely risk-free, free delivery, and a return within a 100-day period. And get $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/Mannix and using the code Mannix. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix.
One of the reasons I think that you're here and what people are looking for with you was, you know, offensive creativity, different type of stuff. The assist numbers are up. You're top 10 in assists this year, bottom third the team was last year. Is that the metric you look for? Is there a number or a statistic out there you use to define quality ball movement, quality success on the offensive end?
Well, it's interesting. You know, this past off season, I went through it because I really wanted to look statistically at a lot of different numbers, and the analytics up here at the NBA, the resources to them are incredible. There is not a direct correlation between offensive efficiency and the number of passes that are made. There are teams that make a lot of passes that are not very efficient offensively. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I had tried to talk to Kevin and Russell a lot about was how can we be more efficient, like them personally and our team. I think assists are always a barometer of what kind of shots you're getting. Now, we could do a great job moving the ball, get a wide open shot, and we miss it. You're not going to get an assist for that. But clearly, I think when you see a higher number of assists, there's a level of ball movement that's taking place. I've always been a big believer of ball movement and player movement and find the open man. And again, Kevin and Russell, because they're such willing passers, they've done a really good job in that. And I think, you know, Russell, to his unselfishness, is one of the league leaders in assists right now because he's done a great job. He's shooting a very, very good percentage from the field, and obviously he's rebounding. But that's something, it's not so much reinventing the wheel or coming up with this like new strategy. It comes down to this. I think every great offensive player needs one thing. And if they don't have one thing, they're never going to be a great offensive player. And that's spacing. And you've got to create space to allow scorers to play in. And if their space is taken away, they got to have someone to throw it to. And all I've tried to do is help those guys generate and create space for themselves.
Is that the eyeball test with spacing, or is there a metric and a stat that you lean on to say, all right, we're creating the spacing that I want to have? Or is it just, I see it on film, I know we're doing it?
You can see it during the game when I'm playing, mm-hmm. when we're playing, and I like to, you know, continually, you know, again, because Kevin and Russell have been so willing, I really think that we've done a great job in that area. We've gotten a lot better, and we've really improved, and they're building the confidence of the other guys inside the team as well. I think when you talk about the ball movement, I think people go and they look at San Antonio and they look at Golden State, and I get the way the ball flies around. We're not San Antonio, and we're not Golden State. We're never going to be them. We have a unique and interesting kind of team that I think needs to play to its identity. We may not move the ball as quickly from one side of the floor and all around, but we can generate space and we can make the extra pass. And I think if we do that, we're going to be a really, really good, efficient team offensively. And I think anytime you have Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, you're always going to be pretty good efficiently on offense. But when we've moved the ball and shared the ball and got it from one side of the floor to the other, we've been very, very good offensively.
Yeah, and that's the question. Is it tricky to balance that? Because Kevin Durant versus anybody one-on-one is advantage you. Russell Westbrook versus anybody one-on-one is probably advantage you. I mean, how do you balance the need for ball movement with the, I would imagine, a desire to have the ball in the hands of two of the top six, seven players in the NBA today?
The question I ask these guys all the time is what we're doing sustainable against the best teams. You know, if Kevin Durant is shooting fadeaway jump shots over two and three defenders, it may work on a given night, but is that actually sustainable through a seven-game playoff series? And the answer I would have would be no. You can maybe win a game doing that, but can you win it and beat a really good team in a playoff series? Probably not. So there is that balance where, you know what, if Kevin Durant's going one-on-one, and it's him on his man and he's got space, hey, that's great. If it's Kevin Durant versus three guys, that's probably not what we're looking for. Same thing with Russell. So you try to give them positions on the floor and you try to give them opportunities through ball movement and player movement that when they attack, are they attacking against one defender or attacking against three? And I don't think any player can go against three. These two guys maybe at times can do it on a given night, but I don't know, like I said earlier, the question I always ask them, is this sustainable basketball? Can we really sustain playing this way? And I give all the guys credit just in terms of just trying to see a bigger picture about how we need to play maybe a little bit more democratically and share it a little bit more with each other.
You mentioned earlier the advantage you had in having Monty and Mo on the bench. Obviously, we know with Monty, the unspeakable tragedy he had is dealing with now. How hard was that for you as an organization, for you personally, to deal with when it happened?
I don't think the basketball piece of it was that hard for me because, you know, I've been around the game for a long period of time. We have unbelievable people here inside this building with a wealth of experience and knowledge. The hard part for me was seeing two unbelievable guys, and I say like close friends, like Mo's going through his pain every day with his hip, and your heart just goes out for him. He can barely get out of a chair. He's almost crying. He's got tears coming down his eyes because he's in so much pain. He's still trying to work. And then to get the news about Monty's wife and to see him have to go through that with five kids, your heart just breaks because you built this relationship, you know, as a group of guys every single day since August. And now all of a sudden here you get in the middle of the end of February and all of a sudden, bang, like everything changes. And then you go and Mr. McClendon passes away. And then a week later, Dion Waiters, his brother, passes away. And it's like all this stuff's coming at us at one time. I don't think you get through that unless you have great people around you. And that's what Monty and Mo are. They're great, great people. And you don't replace great people. But we also have a lot of other people inside this building. You know, Mark Bryant's been a 15-year pro. He's been on the bench for a long time. You know, Darko, who's on our staff, is from Serbia. And he you know, was a head coach in the D-League, has been in the NBA for several years. There's really enough for experience. Royale Ivy, who's played here in this organization. We just got a lot of good people to help us get through that. So I think the basketball part was okay. It was the personal part that I struggled with the most.
Really? That's interesting because I would have thought that having two NBA head coaches, that might be something you would have lost. You apparently think you were good with that part of it, that losing them.
Well, I don't think you ever replace their experience. Mm-hmm. I don't think you ever replace their knowledge of being a head coach. But I think because of the people that were inside the organization, we could pick up a little bit of what we're missing. I don't think you replace Mo Cheeks' 36 years of, you know, being in the NBA or, you know, Monty's 20 plus years of being in, you just don't do it. And it was great for me. But at the same point, going through that, they're not with me maybe during the games, but I'm talking to them during the day. They're watching games. We're chatting. We're keeping in contact. We're talking. So maybe they weren't there for the game exactly, but they were still involved, and I still appreciated them being involved in terms of helping me. So no question they were sorely missed, but I do think there were some other people around me that were able to pick up maybe some of that load.
Your first experience in the playoffs as a coach coming up, anxious, eager, what's the word you'd use to describe?
Yeah, I'm excited, anxious, you know, be a little bit different. The one thing is a little bit different. I know when you kind of go into that NCAA tournament, you know, okay, if we lose tonight, it's over, you know, and obviously the playoffs, it's seven games.
You can take a loss.
Yeah, I don't know if we want to take losses, but, you know, it's a little bit different. So I'm excited about it. I think the biggest thing I've tried to look at for me this whole season has been growing, developing, learning. Like, I'll be honest with you, it was really hard for me to begin the year. It was really hard. And the reason it was hard is because you've got a group of veteran guys that have played against San Antonio, Orlando, Detroit, a lot. And here I'm coming in, I got to catch up. I got to catch up to the personnel. What are they running? What's the coach doing side of the bounce? So the amount of time and effort I was putting in film-wise to get up to speed with these teams. Once we got through playing everybody once, that's when it started to slow down for me a little bit because I didn't feel like, okay, here we are playing San Antonio day in between. Now we're playing Orlando. And I'm trying to like, okay, now I'm starting from scratch everywhere where a lot of these guys were so much. Now I can see things. So that was a little bit hard. So going into the playoffs, it being somewhat new, I'm excited about it because I'm going to get a chance to learn and grow. And I'm going to get a chance to see adjustments and changes you need to make during the course of the series. And I think we got great people here. We got good players. And I think to collectively together, we'll just keep on striving and moving.
I followed the sideshow that was LeBron in 2010, and what was he going to do? Where was he going to go? It doesn't seem like it's been that way with Kevin. Occasionally, you have people in Boston. Kevin, what's your favorite restaurant? Do you like, hey, Kevin Durant's coming to Boston? Has that part of it been what you expected? Has it been a little bit easier than maybe you expected with the hoopla that surrounds KD?
Yeah, I didn't know really what to expect, to be honest with you, because obviously that's Kevin's choice. It's his decision, but I've been really, really impressed the way he's handled himself. And I think the one part of it that people have kind of missed a little bit on, here's a guy that missed 50-something games last year. Mm-hmm. He loves to play the game. And all of a sudden, it's taken away from you. And now he's got a chance to get back on the court and go play. I think he's wanted to focus on playing. And he's been great the way he's handled everything and the way he's just tried to stay focused on helping our team grow and develop and get better and try to be the very, very best it can be. And I feel bad for him sometimes because when he goes to different cities, he gets asked about it. I don't think it's something necessarily he always wants to talk about. I think he's respectful and he's polite and he's such a good guy. He'll answer questions as best he can. But I think he's really tried to keep his main focus on playing for OKC and this team and his teammates and doing the very best job he can.
Do you miss anything about college basketball?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I miss all the people at Florida. I really miss the people I worked with every day. I mean, really, really close people. I miss the players being younger sometimes and needing some help in their growth and development stage. You know, you got to think about this. The first time they're away from home, mm-hmm. Everything's a first for them. And you're in the middle of this trying to help them grow and develop and prioritize their time and get in the gym and not get caught up in all the social things that are going on and get their education and be the best player they can be. And, you know, going through that process and seeing them need help. And, you know, here they're adults, they're men, they've been through a lot, but the one thing I've enjoyed with these guys up here is they're still looking to grow and get better, which has been great. You know, I missed that part. People think that, like, I didn't like recruiting. I really, really enjoyed the recruiting. I didn't enjoy losing out on guys like we all didn't like doing. But, I mean, I met some unbelievable people and families, of even kids that we didn't get that I really enjoyed. So the one thing that I do like about the NBA for me is I feel I really have a hard time multitasking and concentrating. And I think a lot of times as college has gone on, it's a multitasking job. You know, one minute you're watching film, then an assistant coach comes in, hey, we got this guy on the phone's recruit. Then you hang out, oh, so-and-so's got a problem here academically, need to see it too. And before you know it, you're like all over the place. The one thing about this is like, you know, you're focused on your team, you're focused on your team. And I felt like that in college during the season, you're focused on your team. But once the season ends, like it's kind of like you're so many different hats you have to wear. You got a fundraising hat you've got to wear. You got to go, you know, on the road recruiting, and maybe you got to go deal with your players. You're doing a lot of different things where, to me, this has been a very, very isolated, concentrated, focused on basketball and your team and the season and trying to get better.
Who's the recruit you missed on that hurt the most in your 20s?
I had a lot of them. It's funny because I see these guys walking around in the NBA a lot of times, and it's amazing. You know, recently we recruited Jabari Parker really hard. Justice Winslow, you know, I coached Justice there in the USA team. Julius Randle, just to name a few.
There's a few.
I mean, those guys are pretty good. You know what I mean? We missed out on them. Grayson Allen, who was at Duke, you know, recruited him. Brandon Knight, another guy that went to Kentucky. And then obviously I can't complain too much to the David Lees and Joe Kim Noahs and, you know, the Bradley Beals. Those guys weren't too bad either.
You see these guys in the pros though, and like, do they remind you of the recruiting trips that
they do a little bit? You know what's amazing, I said this before, is how much more mature and older they were, you know, when I see them now in uniform. And it's great to see what they've been able to do and how they've been able to grow and develop in their own personal careers.
Well, Billy, I appreciate it. I know you're busy, and
thank you.
I look forward to coming back next week when this podcasting equipment doesn't work and doing the exact same thing over again.
Well, I'll help you set it up next time.
Thanks, Billy.
Thank you.
That's it for the Vertical Podcast. Remember, you can download this episode and more on Stitcher, TuneIn, really anywhere you can download podcasts. And don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. Make sure you also check out the Vertical Podcast with Woj and the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick as well.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.